And salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast here with you for the week of Friday, June 15th of the year 2018. How's it going, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages? I am Mike the Legend, who's so glad to be back with you for this week, a very busy week. It is the week of E3 that happened down in Los Angeles, so we will have so much to get to on this week's program.
Yes, and as such, this week I am Dennis, the man who has no time for a nickname this week, as E3 happened, and there is much to discuss.
That's right. Every year around this time, the Electronic Entertainment Expo happens at the LA Convention Center. It is the big trade show for all big video game companies to go show their wares, show off their games, maybe announce a few surprises or reveal a few surprises, and really get people excited about what they have to offer in the short term, near term, and near short term. So basically the next couple months between now and the end of the year, and maybe into next year as well.
And maybe into the next couple of years.
Which we'll get into, because there are certainly some games that are nowhere near coming out.
No,
but possibly not even this decade.
Yes, but just to start things off before getting into anything, I think now's a good time to just maybe jump into like a couple of quick hot takes. Well, one major hot take, I think one that I think is worth discussing briefly, is what game or games are you most excited about after E3?
After E3, based on what I saw from the various conferences and that all the different publishers put forward, I would have to say Assassin's Creed Odyssey intrigued me the most. This seems to be a new frontier of Assassin's Creed games with Assassin's Creed Origins from last fall. They seem to have figured some things out, tweaked the standard Assassin's Creed formula, and obviously those couple years off for the franchise were beneficial to the current franchise and going forward. But Assassin's Creed Odyssey, if you're not aware, you play a Spartan. It is the earliest set Assassin's Creed game in the ancient timeline, because you're in ancient Greece. You play a Spartan. You have your choice of either a male protagonist or a female protagonist. Ultimately, it doesn't matter because the story remains the same thing. You are no longer with the Hidden Blade. You have the Broken Spear of King Leonidas, yes, from 300 fame, and what's got me intrigued about it is, one, it looks gorgeous, and the set pieces of Greece are fantastic, and you will be fighting a Minotaur at various points, possibly many Minotaurs, who knows, but it's bringing a lot more RPG elements into the game.
Yes, continuing their influence that The Witcher 3 had on Assassin's Creed Origins into this game.
Certainly.
Which isn't a bad thing.
No, if you're Witcher 3 is not a bad game to try and replicate.
No.
And that's entirely okay. But it's got a much larger skill tree for upgrading your character, many more options for costumes and appearance. And also, I don't know if there was in Assassin's Creed Origins, but what they showed in Odyssey indicates that there's going to be a decently fleshed out dialogue tree. So when you're interacting with characters, you'll have your choice of how to respond to them instead of just watching a pre-made cinematic and just going through the motions, anything like that. And also too, what's really intriguing to me about Assassin's Creed Odyssey is the fact that I believe it's Socrates or Plato, one of the great ancient Greek philosophers, is in the game. And they'll question you about your mission, and if you killed anyone, you'll kind of have to justify your actions to them, which is ridiculous.
Awesome.
One of the great philosophers is in the game. Now, Da Vinci was in a previous Assassin's Creed game. It's historical figures will be part of Assassin's Creed games forever and going forward, but that idea of having the philosopher and really making you question, was it necessary to kill that person, that enemy, that guard? Maybe? I don't know. If you take a different tack, maybe if you go with as little blood as possible in the game, what path will that take you in?
Are you afraid of conflict?
That could be a question, or are you, what are you trying to compensate for with all this aggression? Who knows? It's intriguing. I want to see more of it, but, that's my initial hot take. If I understand, you have a few that have tickled your fancy initially.
Yeah, so there's four games in particular now that I'm getting pretty jazzed about. I mean, I already knew that I was sort of going to be interested in them anyways, but now that I'm seeing more and more about them, I'm getting jazzed, is I think a good way to put it. First of all, Death Stranding, this is what, the 33 in a row that we've just seen a crazy trailer for this game, and or one or two crazy trailers for the game, and I feel with every single trailer that comes up, while we see more and learn more, it just raises more questions. And Kojima is basically to video games like David Lynch is to television, I think, and movies and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I'm starting to think.
A very distinct artist.
Yeah, so when I was watching the Death, like, as I felt throughout watching all the Death Stranding trailers, which I rewatched the first three just to kind of reacclimatize myself to what it was, just so like when I watched this fourth one, there's actually a weird continuity starting to develop between them all, and I have no idea what's going on. I feel like Homer Simpson watching Twin Peaks or something going, brilliant. I have no idea what's happening. It's just, like, I guess we know that your character, Norman Reedus' character, is going to be the character that you control, and he's some kind of a delivery person for babies in some kind of, like, a tube thing? I don't know. I don't know, there's, like, invisible monsters with hands for feet that kind of, you know, can destroy you and turn everything into water, maybe? And there's a lot of crabs still everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, yeah. So, no information at all regarding any sort of release date on it.
No, that it's one of those games, and there was a couple at E3 that are probably 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Yeah, like, who knows exactly? I mean, I have no idea what this game is actually going to be, ultimately. We know that, like, there's a couple more actors in it. And, yeah, it's getting weirder and crazier and more epic, it seems.
It seems like Hideo Kojima is subscribing to one of the great quotes from the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper. Just when you think you've got the answers, I change the question.
Exactly.
It's exactly. Like, oh, I kind of understand where he's going with this game. New trailer. I am so confused.
It's like, I have no idea. But that's not the only game, of course. There's three more. The second one, Cyberpunk 2077. I was already pretty excited for it. You know, the team that brought us, you know, all the Witcher games, especially Witcher 3.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing game, maybe one of the best RPGs of all time. Going the Cyberpunk route, it really looked awesome. And I mean, if anything else, like, one of the interesting takeaways I think I saw from it too was that one of the criticisms I think that CD Projekt Red received for The Witcher 3 when they were releasing The Witcher 3 from a lot of people was, like, very much a lack of ethnic diversity. And the argument was, well, it's supposed to be medieval Poland. Like, there's, like, literally just white Polish people in medieval Poland. What do you want? And, this one, they can't be accused of that in this because now it's set in, like, very much like a cyberpunk future where everyone's going to be around and everyone and their dog literally is around. So, looks really amazing, really quite striking visually, and the thing that I thought was very interesting about this was, unlike a lot of cyberpunk media, it takes place mostly during the day.
True.
And they managed to pull it off. Like, they pull off the cyberpunk feel even in the daytime. It still feels just as gritty and dark as any sort of classic Blade Runner style thing, which is typically kind of at night.
And that's the default to almost cyberpunk aesthetic, just a dark, gritty nighttime, bright neon signage on buildings to convey that go hand in hand with the cyberpunk theme.
Yeah, of course. But again, two more games here. The second last of the ones that kind of grabbed my attention the most was The Last of Us 2. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd never played the first one. I knew that I'm going to have to play the first one, I think, now, just to catch myself up on the story. Because the second one, look, at this point, I think, like, I've said it several times in the past now, where we don't need, like, it's a given that games look great now. If it's a AAA game title, it should look great.
Yes. That is the default. That is the standard.
Yeah. However, It seems like Naughty Dog in particular is committed to having the best 3D animation you've ever seen continually and putting it in video games, for God's sakes, not even in movies, but video games that you can play. The Last of Us 2, everything about the trailer was some of the best animation I think I've ever seen in my life.
It looks like it's some sort of technical leap from what we've seen of games for this generation.
Yeah, I mean, like, the big thing that everyone was talking about was, you know, the kiss between Ellie and, I don't know the other girl's name, but...
some other girl at a social event that they're all attending.
Yeah, no, it's great. Representing LGBTQ, mm-hmm. It's fine. It's the world we live in, and it's a good thing to see. However, even if you just... let's say it's not your thing. Whatever. Fine. Relax. But the kiss itself, if you look at the skin, like, the way it's animated, it looks like real skin. The way that, you know how, like, it kind of, you know, sticks together for a second, and when you're pulling away, it all kind of, like, does that peeling away thing?
Mm-hmm.
It does that, and it looks natural. And I read an article about how they actually have, like, programs and stuff that they had to develop for skin to interact that way. And it's like, holy crap, like the level of detail that they go into with this is bananas.
And it looks legitimately like some of the best, you know, character to character physical interaction we've ever seen. Because normally, if there's two characters to be engaging in some level of intimacy or interacting with each other in a cutscene, because it was a rendered, pre-rendered, you know, sequence.
Maybe.
Or if that's full on game engine, then Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Either way,
it's really good.
It looks really good. And normally, in games prior to this, if two characters are about to kiss or engage in some sort of hanky-panky, the camera just pans to the side. You don't actually see things unfold. Even like a kiss sometimes, because that is a very difficult thing to animate.
Yeah.
The complexity and the facial muscles, to make it look natural is the real challenge there.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there have been kisses in games and stuff, like, The Witcher 3, again, one of the best RPGs of all time, I'll still maintain that. Really, like, they had a few saucy scenes in the game, and there was kissing and stuff, and it looked okay, but it didn't, like, when you're looking at that, you're like, yep, this is a 3D character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's an animation. I genuinely watched The Last of Us trailer, and I forgot I was watching an animation. That's how crazy it was.
And beyond that, the contrast that there is in that Last of Us Part 2 trailer.
Yeah.
Because it goes from a moment of great animation, technical achievement, but also intimacy and love and
warmth.
Tenderness, to just bleak. Just outright bleak.
Just and excruciating, uncomfortable violence. And
of Ellie stabbing another character in the neck multiple times.
Yeah. And like silencing his screams and stuff. It's this very much like an uncomfortable thing to watch. And it's, yeah, I want to play that. I didn't play the first one. I'm thinking I probably should at this point just to catch myself up, but yeah. And then finally, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Fallout 76, because as a fan of, you know, Bethesda games, Fallout 76, new Fallout game, great. Also, the way that it's being sold is it's finally a single player-ish kind of, you can play it solo, meaning that there's missions that you can do Fallout style, but I can just play it with a group of my friends because it's always online
mm-hmm.
and you're always going to be on, you know, a different server with a small amount of people.
Will you be able to set up private servers?
I don't know if you'll be able to set up private servers, but I know that at most, I think Todd Howard said that the most number of people that you're ever going to be in this vast, vast map with is 16.
Interesting.
Because as he said, it's the apocalypse, not a theme park, which was awesome. And only Todd Howard could get away with saying something like that.
Clever.
Yeah, that and their ridiculous Skyrim Very Special Edition for Amazon Alexa, which we'll talk about in a second.
Well, yeah, actually, you know what? Since we're on Bethesda anyway, let's just go there, because as part of the their presentation, they like to have some fun.
Yeah, so in part of the fun, as I mentioned, you know, the way Todd Howard opened up, you know, their big Bethesda Studios part of the Bethesda presentation was, you know, of course, people are just kind of like waiting to hear about this Fallout 76 project that we've, there's been murmurs of, but his first thing was saying, I know the thing you're all waiting for is for me to announce what else we can put Skyrim onto. And then he just said, well, it's going to be on Alexa. Like, and then there was this big hilarious trailer starring,
Keegan-Michael Key.
Keegan-Michael Key from Key and Peele. And I don't know if it was actually his girlfriend, probably some actress, in a parody of the typical video game, you know, commercial that we often see, you know, people in a very like upscale house with some very clean furniture and like some future, like not futuristic, but you know, that very postmodern kind of setting, living room, very clean lines kind of house.
Yeah. Very open feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And him going, I'm just going to, like he's saying, like it shows him reaching out, about to touch the Switch, which is sitting on the table, moves his hand over, about to grab the Xbox controller, about to grab his TV remote. And then he brings his hand back and says, Alexa, play Skyrim. And then Alexa's like, okay. And then it just goes into, you are level 76 or 56 or whatever. There's, it's a hilarious trailer. We have a link on our website, thearcadeshow.com, where you can watch it and laugh for yourself. Oh, we all had a good laugh. Ha ha. Great parody of, you know, the state of Skyrim, because yeah, haha, Skyrim's been on every system. Mm-hmm. Great, funny. However, Todd Howard is actually a madman, and you actually, they released an Alexa skill that is Skyrim for your Alexa. So if you have Alexa or the Alexa app on Android or anything like that, this is a skill you can add to it. So, I mean, I've never really used Alexa, but my understanding is every skill has a word that you launch it with. Of course, the word that you launch Skyrim with is Skyrim. And it's, yeah, so the best thing I can do is just read off of the listing on Amazon.com describing this skill. And they say, first of all, it's called the Very Special Edition, Skyrim Very Special Edition. They say you can, quote unquote, take your rightful place as the Dragonborn of Legend again and explore Skyrim using the power of your voice, your Thum. And hilariously enough, there's a number of different bullet points that indicate what you as the Dragonborn can do with this Alexa skill. And among those skills, among those things that Alexa can do are guard your knees against arrows, walk straight up a mountain instead of going around, fail to collect all stones of Baron Zaya for like the fifth time, and open wooden doors. Which are all fantastic. And if, I mean, I laughed at every single one of them. There's a huge list of them on the Amazon's page for this Alexa skill. And they're all hilarious. They're all just great references to Skyrim. And some of the reviews make me really want to download and try Alexa and get this skill just so I can mess around myself.
If you don't actually have the Alexa unit itself, you can download, I believe, the app to your,
your smartphone. Yeah. It's just an app. And I guess you add skills to this app or whatever. And yeah, the part of the other joke, of course, in the video was that they were saying, that they were, it was also going to be out on the Etch-a-Sketch, the pager, as well as the Samsung Smart Refrigerator. Those ones are not real, though all the references were great. But
I'd be intrigued to see somebody, maybe not officially through Bethesda, but someone on their own try and rig up Skyrim on the Etch-a-Sketch. I want to see that.
I'd like to see an Etch-a-Sketch used as a screen. I think that would be a great technological feat if they could do it. I don't know what the refresh rate would be. Pretty bad, I would imagine.
As fast as you could shake the damn thing.
Just constantly buzzing, just like, but yeah.
But so yes, Skyrim Very Special Edition. Hell of a thing. A great little moment of humor and levity at the Bethesda show. But, and so that's amazingly our first of two E3 ludicrous leadoffs. We have another one, because also during E3, Ubisoft held their own conference and,
which is where you would have seen the Assassin's Creed Odyssey trailer.
Indeed.
Certainly.
And as is kind of standard for Ubisoft, they announced the 2019 edition of their Just Dance game, just literally called Just Dance 2019, because like Madden, all you do is change the year. You've got the title, you've got the brand, it's well established. You literally are just putting a new annual iteration out, a few different songs, move forward from there.
Yeah, a few dance moves, fine.
Yeah, yeah. That's not the ludicrous thing. That's not what's worth talking about. What is worth talking about is just the number of platforms that they are releasing this Just Dance game onto. You've got your standard platforms like the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, Switch, things of that nature. But it keeps going from there because there's also going to be one released for the Xbox 360 Kinect.
Yeah, which is crazy in and of itself, considering Microsoft themselves are not really supporting the Kinect anymore. But that's not the ludicrous leadoff part of this, believe it or not.
No, the ludicrous leadoff part comes from the fact that Just Dance 2019, coming out this fall, will also be made available for the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, not the Wii U, not the Switch, well...
Switch also,
probably Wii U also, but Wii. Remember the original Wii? The system that was released 13 years ago now?
That thing?
Yeah.
2006? The mid-2000s? The sensation that swept the nation with motion controls? And you could understand the correlation between moving around in your living room and then also simulating dancing with a Just Dance game? And of course, there were so many Just Dance games and knockoff games on the Nintendo Wii back in the day because it was just, it was like flies to honey. Anyone who could produce shovelware produced a game for the Wii.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's getting a new game, a modern game, Just Dance 2019 for the Wii. Now, just because it will be released on that platform does not mean you will have an easy time finding it at your local retailer. God help you, because nobody is selling Wii games these days. Whatever has not been sold at discount prices or cleared out in the shitty $3 discount bin have likely either been returned to the distributor or just tossed out.
Yeah, very much likely. I mean, you're only probably ever going to find this as a novelty at your local video game shop, like the dedicated video game shop, maybe even not even at your EB Games or GameStop, but... like the neighborhood shop, like the one that is like trying to compete with that. We have one locally called PNP Games. They haven't given us any money or anything. It's not an ad or anything. That's just sort of like the example, the analogous example I can think of.
Yes.
You very much likely have one in wherever you're listening to this from.
Some sort of mom and pop local or like Todd's Game Shop or something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
One of those.
Or even like a comic shop or something that also sells video games like that. That type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as Chris Kohler from Kotaku.com points out, it's not the first time we've seen a game get released for a console that's way beyond its final days. Atari 2600 games were being produced apparently into the early 1990s, even though the Atari 2600 came out in 1977.
True, and to some extent we still see companies releasing retro 8-bit style games on traditional 8-bit NES cartridges, though, things of that nature.
That's a bit different because that's actually like admitting it's a retro thing and they're just sort of like tailoring it for that. They're putting 2019 in the title of a long running game saying that, yep, this is a new game. We're going to put it on every single system. If it coexists on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, and the Wii U? That's crazy. Or the Wii? That's crazy.
Here's the interesting thing. Apparently, it is coming to the Wii, as we have talked about, but not coming to the Wii U, and also not coming to the PlayStation 3. Though the PlayStation 3 did get Just Dance 2018, but it is not getting Just Dance 2019. For whatever reason, Ubisoft has decided that still the Wii. The Wii's getting a game. So, yes.
Yeah.
Consider it the time of day, hell truly freezing over, the Wii getting Just Dance 2019. You know, as if any other events in society over the past, say, 3-4 years haven't indicated that hell's freezing over. Again, I blame the Chicago Cubs for winning the World Series, because that kicked us off onto a different timeline.
Yeah, it really did.
It's the only way to explain everything else that has happened as a result. And in the years since. But nevertheless, we're not going to get into that and bore you and depress you because God knows there was enough post-apocalyptic shooters shown off at E3.
Yeah.
So now we're that we're out of ludicrous leadoffs, we're going to break with our traditional approach to E3 wrap-up shows. We're not really going to break down, here's what Microsoft showed, here's what Sony showed, here's what Nintendo showed, because...
It's a bit much doing it that way, and frankly, I think it's a little bit more interesting if we just sort of talk about general impressions and, like, the stuff that really stuck out to us.
That's true, and I can also kind of serve with that, because... one of the impressions I had from this E3, based solely on the big companies of Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, they being the console manufacturers, those with the biggest revenue sources and the biggest companies out there, setting the console space, the impression I have is I found myself being somewhat underwhelmed with this year's E3. And what's leading me to that feeling, I believe, is the lack of surprises. This year, we didn't really have too many companies, with a big reveal, a surprise reveal. You know, we've had past years of, Sony maybe with a surprise trailer for No Man's Sky or something like that, or, hell, even Ubisoft in past years with just one more thing and then showing off Watch Dogs or something of that nature. But that didn't really seem to happen at this year's E3. And whatever we knew, whatever games were shown, we kind of knew ahead of time, either because they were announced by the companies themselves, or because they were kind of leaked ahead of time. And those we can't really account for, we can't do anything about, that's just the nature of the industry and how news flows sometimes, but underwhelmed for that reason, but also too, I'd say, it seemed like a lot of what was shown, and I'll kind of use the Microsoft conference as an example, because Microsoft's conference went with the approach of scattershot, just everything, just carpet bomb, game announcements, reveals, trailers, just show all the games. And in total, they showed over 50 games. Of the major ones, say of the 20 major titles, only eight were platform or console exclusive. Everything else is multi-platform, and as a viewer,
Yeah, that's sort of been a problem for a few years at this point, though. Myself, I mean, I get where you're coming from. Like, there wasn't any real big surprises, but for some reason...
And perhaps we've been spoiled.
Yeah, we have been spoiled, maybe, but for some reason, I mean, even though there was no real surprises for me, I think I actually was more excited this year than I was in the last couple of, for some reason, like, just overall, because... I think it was just sort of, companies weren't over-promising, they were just sort of really delivering on some promises, I think. And we actually got to see, you know, the culmination of some of these crazy promises we've heard. And we actually saw a lot of, like, really solid footage, and, like, there's actually a lot of legitimate things that we can be excited for real release dates and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them are actually a lot sooner than I thought they'd be.
True, if it hadn't been for the fact that CD Projekt Red had announced years ago that they were working on something called Cyberpunk 2077, that could have been a surprise.
It could have been.
And I guess you could take the fact that it was shown off as a bit of a surprise, but it didn't strike me in that way, in whatever moment, in what I was feeling, but...
It still looked awesome, though.
Oh, God, it still does. It's undeniably awesome, and... To do everything that trailer showed in the daytime just requires so much more detail.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can hide stuff in nighttime. You don't have to animate as well or as much detail in nighttime.
Yeah, and you can get away with, like, some of, like a lot of cyberpunk media does look a little bit kind of lo-fi.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's part of the aesthetic, but, I mean, do a hi-fi version of lo-fi at least. Like, where do it, like, so that we can tell that it's hi-fi doing lo-fi almost ironically, maybe. Like, and they kind of nailed it. But yeah, like, a lot of, like, for me, it was just seeing, it really felt like a lot of, like, focused efforts, as opposed to just sort of companies just putting out, like, well, this might happen, with the exception, of course, of Hideo Kojima, who is a crazy person.
Never expect your release date from that. It's just going to kind of happen when it happens.
Part of me has a feeling that it's never actually going to be a game, and it's just going to be this continuing narrative that he just keeps driving forward in 8-minute intervals from E3 to E3 for the next, like, 11 E3s until eventually, like, he just releases some completely different game. That's what I think is going to happen with Death Stranding.
Ah, give everyone the old swerve.
Yeah, the whole...
The old M. Night Shyamalan, what a twist!
Except done in some bananas way. Way better than M. Night Shyamalan could have ever done.
That's fair. And perhaps what you're thinking of is also due in part to the fact that Sony actually pared down their conference. Instead of just doing a carpet bombing approach, they had a few titles, but really shown in depth.
Yeah, like admittedly, I didn't really watch the Xbox thing. I didn't watch the Microsoft conference. I watched, admittedly, I just kind of like stuck mostly to what things that I thought might be interesting to me. I watched, you know, the Bethesda games part of the Bethesda conference. I watched, you know, a good portion of a lot of the PlayStation conference. I watched lots of parts of Nintendo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'll talk about all this stuff in a second, but yeah, from like the stuff I did see, it was really like companies just sort of taking a step back and putting their best foot forward.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it wasn't the most surprising foot, it was actually even if it was all the stuff that we were expecting to see, I think I was pleasantly surprised by how good and solid a lot of stuff looks like it has the potential to be for a change, as opposed to just like, wow, that was a neat sizzle reel. Who knows what the actual game will look like? Whereas no, like this is like, we've got a lot of actual gameplay. Like even if it was like for The Last of Us 2, a lot of the gameplay that they showed like must have been very like pathed out exactly, like almost like a tool assisted run or like maybe edited a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, like they did a good job of showing like, if this is what the gameplay looks like, this game looks incredible.
That does, and it's got a great air of tension to it.
Yeah.
Without really doing much.
Yeah, exactly, but like, that was just like one of many games that sort of, I mean, not, that was the best looking game. I'm not gonna say any other game came close to Last of Us,
mm-hmm.
Part 2, but that was sort of the general impression with a lot of game companies and what they were showing off. Of course, like, with the exception of the Microsoft conference, which I didn't really watch, but sounded a very, very scattershot.
It sounded like they took a carpet bombing approach and just, instead of using it as an opportunity, which for a number of previous E3s, we've seen Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft use their conference, their time, to showcase games, services, exclusives, to really sell consumers on reasons to buy their consoles, and therefore buy the games. By the software that goes along with the hardware. But it seemed like Microsoft didn't really have much in the way of first party or exclusives to show, so then they used it as a platform for everybody else's game.
Yeah.
Which is a unique approach, but if I'm the consumer, and truth be told, I have no horse in this current generation of consoles. I've not put my money down on anyone yet, so I'm still open and to be sold on any of these three consoles at this current point. But for Microsoft, at least in my mind, to be showing all these multi-platform games, well, that really reduces the importance of having an Xbox One.
Yeah.
And it perhaps leads me to still feel underwhelmed that, well, okay, great, you're showing all these games. Why should I get an Xbox One? This is your time to sell me.
Yeah. Though I guess there's also a point too when like I kind of just look at it as like, I don't care that I'm watching the Microsoft conference. I just want to see what more games are coming out. And then I'll look up what systems the games are going to be on. So I guess in that sense, it's backfiring for Microsoft, but it's not backfiring for the developers and the publishers.
Oh, the more eyeballs on their games, the better. And I understand that.
But so while we're speaking of Microsoft, I mean, for as little news as they had, they still did have some news.
I mean, they showed off, a Halo game, Halo Infinite, but that was like 2 minutes and very little detail other than the fact that it has no real release date. And this is actually one of the things I found too that maybe led to me feeling underwhelmed. A lot of what was shown, especially at the Microsoft conference, was 2019 or TBA to be announced.
Yeah, or right now.
Yeah, or right now.
Or it's like a lot of we'll get to that in a second, but like the TBA, Microsoft for some reason teased that they're of course developing a new Xbox, which...
It was a throwaway line that Phil Spencer kind of tossed out towards the end of their show, which, okay, great, but why are you already alluding to a future console. Presumably, we all know it's being worked on. You don't have to speak about it. Should not your time and energy and focus be spent on keeping eyeballs on the Xbox One X, which you just came out with last year?
Yeah, it seemed very strange that they would say, hey, we have this new console coming out, giving us a codename of Scarlet.
Well, no, he didn't even say it was Scarlet. It's like he just only tossed away the throwaway line that they're that the engineers are, quote, deep into architecting the next Xbox consoles.
Right, right.
Where we will once again deliver on our commitment to deliver the benchmark of console gaming, end quote. So, but then after that, that kind of got the tech blogs and other tech insiders talking, and apparently this, whatever it is, the next Xbox, has a code name of Scarlet.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And not only that, apparently the next Xbox hardware, whatever form or shape it takes, is going to be a series of devices.
Whatever that means. And it's going to be arriving in 2020.
Yes, that according to Brad Sams of Thurrott.com, which is a tech blog, saying that they've seen information that indicates that the next Xbox consoles coming in 2020.
Yeah, and I think the most curious thing, though, that Phil Spencer said was that he said the future of Xbox is on every device possible, which, yeah, apparently the future, he thinks the future of gaming will eventually be moving away from hardware, with the new focus being solely on players instead of devices. And there's a quote from him here.
He was speaking to the Guardian newspaper during E3.
And he said, we pivoted about 3 or 4 years ago to thinking about the gamer first, not the devices first. I still see remnants of that. What you can do to force somebody to buy a device, and then once you've bought it, own the store and the services. But this limits people on the creative side because you have to build games for specific devices. Our focus is bringing console quality games that you see on TV or PC to any device. So maybe that might have been why he put more focus on just all of the developers and all the games instead of maybe just any specific Xbox hardware. Seems like a strange thing to put out, though, because there wasn't really much of a plan beyond that. I mean, like, he goes waxing on about, he kind of goes waxing very almost philosophical about, like, his ideas of where he wants to see this go, but doesn't really provide any sort of concrete information, like any apps or anything we can download for phones or anything yet.
No, but if we were to take that and extrapolate or layer that on top of the news that they're working on the next hardware, it seems like the next Xbox might be a streaming system.
Which might be interesting.
And we might see the end, or maybe it's just an app. Or perhaps it's both.
It might just be like a cheap set-top box that you buy and then everything is just streamed over the internet.
Yeah.
Then that's it. You just upgrade every now and then whenever a new, you know, video standard comes out or something, but that's it. Give you different peripherals and stuff to interface with it maybe, but.
And actually prior to E3, Yves Guillemot, the CEO of Ubisoft, I did see an interview where he was quoted as saying that, either this current one I believe it's the next generation of home consoles, he said, would be the last, and everything after that is streaming.
Yeah.
And you might think it's weird that we're talking about, like, the next Xbox hardware already and, like, the future of consoles when we're still kind of in the middle of this current hardware generation. I mean, Xbox One X, PS4 Pro, those are still fairly young. I mean, One X just came out last year as hardware refreshes. The Switch is still new, but Switch is kind of left out of this equation.
Yeah, Switch is kind of off to the side in terms of, like, this type of discussion because Nintendo, as we know, doesn't really care about keeping up with the competition in terms of hardware, so it's not really a concern for them. They're more focused on the games and, you know, the experience.
Yes, they found a unique selling point that is not hardware-specific or driven. It's the mobility and portability of taking your games on the go. Cool. It's obviously worked well for them.
Yeah.
But for PlayStation and Xbox, yeah, we're still kind of in the middle of it, so why are we already worrying about the future of games, which is a very curious thing. And we saw a couple of different titles spoken of and announced during E3, two of which were specifically mentioned as being next-gen games.
Yeah, though there is one, before we talk about this, I think there's one point that's interesting to make here from when Phil Spencer was discussing this whole every device possible thing, he had a quote here saying, "I want to see the creators that I have relationships with reach all 2 billion people who play games and not have to turn their studio into something that makes match 3 games rather than story-driven single-player games, because that's the only way to reach a bigger platform. That's our goal, to bring high-quality games to every device possible on the planet," which might interestingly tie into the fact that Microsoft made... Well, Microsoft's been throwing money around like bananas lately.
Yeah, they were tight-fisted for a number of years, but not anymore.
Yeah, like they just recently bought GitHub, which a lot of, I mean, that might mean nothing to a lot of people. As a developer myself who works primarily in like open source ecosystems, it means possibly the world. I mean, GitHub is everything to a lot of people. A lot of people are kind of worried about what that means. A lot of people are also saying this is great. Microsoft's kind of turned their act around, and this could be further evidence of that, but...
What was the price point on that again? Was it
$7.5 billion? So...
Good sweet God.
A site that has consistently lost money every single year it's been in existence, Microsoft just paid $7 billion for.
$7.5 billion for that, plus what the... Was it 2 or 4 for Mojang back in the day?
It was... I want to say it was $2.5 billion.
So roughly 10-ish billion they've spent.
On those two things alone?
Yes.
And then if I'm not mistaken, they also bought LinkedIn for like 26 billion or something. It was, so basically they've been spending a lot of money lately, which means that they have a lot of money to spend, which means that they keep spending more money, because why not spend money when you have money? What's the point of just having money for no reason?
Exactly. When you're at that Microsoft level, you can make many, many different deals. And during the actual Microsoft conference, Phil Spencer made the surprise announcement that the company, Microsoft, has acquired not one, not two, not three, but 4 different independent game studios.
Yeah.
And they will now all be Microsoft first-party companies.
Yeah, so one of them is one called Undead Labs, who's were the makers of State of Decay 2. Another one is Playground Games, who already makes Microsoft's Forza Horizon series. Compulsion, who is the ones responsible for the dystopian title We Happy Few. And the last one is Ninja Theory, the studio who is responsible for that psychological horror fantasy game that a lot of people are into called Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
And on top of that, Phil Spencer announced that they're forming a brand new studio called The Initiative, which is going to be led by a bloke named Daryl Gallagher, who's the former head of Crystal Dynamics, and was there at the time that the Tomb Raider series got rebooted in 2013. So this brings the total number of Microsoft first-party studios up to 10. And prior to that, there was Mojang, who you know they make Minecraft, Rare, who recently did Sea of Thieves, 343, who make, or 343 Industries, who make Halo, The Coalition, who make Gears of War, which there were a number of Gears of War games announced, which are, meh, expected. They don't turn my crank, but they turn a lot of people's cranks, so good for them. And Turn 10 Studios, who did the Forza series.
The mainline Forza series, yes.
Correct, yes.
But yeah, so Microsoft really, in the last while, has really been trying to reach out and show that they actually want smaller companies to succeed. And I guess they're in a weird position where as a gigantic monolithic company, they can sort of do that now by throwing a whole bunch of money around.
I wonder if too, the fact is that these companies are cheaper to buy than if you were to buy, try and go after somebody much larger.
Yeah. Or trying to start something from scratch, like having to actually like cobble all the talent together and stuff. Why not just like inject some already clearly, well, I don't know about profitable, but some creative company that's come out with some critically acclaimed stuff. Why not just inject, like buy them, give them a nice cash injection and a nice umbrella that they, or a nice,
nice padding
really that they can just sort of have and go, oh, we can keep doing this? Microsoft is giving us Microsoft money to do this? Okay, cool.
We can eat tomorrow?
Yeah. But,
So obviously Phil Spencer is trying to realign the Xbox division of Microsoft to be very software centric.
Yeah, and I think Satya Nadella in general is really trying to make Microsoft maybe really tried to push the image forward in like a positive global citizen type way with all of these different things that have been happening. Mm-hmm. So if there's a big takeaway from E3 and the events leading up to E3, including GitHub, maybe that's good enough for Microsoft. Maybe their scattershot thing was just kind of like, well, we've already done enough in the last little while. Like, here's some games. Fine.
And maybe that's it. They needed to acquire these companies, and now these new acquisitions will turn around. They'll start developing things for the next generation of Xbox, whatever that form they take, whatever form that takes, be it hardware, be it a dongle, be it just a software platform in aggregate. Will they try to become the Netflix of video games? Where it's just an app, a service you can get on anything, and it has
maybe this app will be available on the PlayStation.
Wouldn't that be a mind-blowing experience?
Yeah,
I don't know, and that's part of it. Again, a part of my just underwhelmedness of this E3. It seems like we're kind of in the middle in a lull, and there's something else coming down the line. Part of it too could be the fact that. Also that we've seen these companies no longer are dependent on E3 to get their message out there.
No, and one of the companies that sort of started really bucking the trend early was Nintendo, even though they still play ball and they still do stuff during E3 because you can't be left out during that. Like, you have to have a presence. Even if it's not a main stage presence, you don't need a main stage presence. The internet's a robust place to deliver stuff, and you know, they still do have presence in, you know, the convention side of things anyways, but Nintendo, I mean, nothing mind blowing, but they did really firm up some stuff that we were unsure about, and also had a couple of little minor surprises that really were nice to know.
They did. So obviously I think we should start with the big, game takeaway from Nintendo's E3 Direct video blog infomercial. I still don't know what the hell we call this thing. Video thing they released on Tuesday morning. It took up roughly half of the entire length. It was a short video. It was only about 40 minutes, and 25 of those minutes were dedicated to Super Smash Brothers, which we now know is going to be called Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. Why is it going to be called Ultimate?
Well, because it's going to have every single game or every single character from every single Smash Brothers game ever in it.
It's going to be the definitive Smash Brothers game. That certainly seems like what Masahiro Sakurai and everyone else at Sora and everyone else at Bandai Namco, everyone who has sniffed this project, are aiming for it to be. The absolute definitive, do not pass go, do not collect $200 version of Smash Brothers. Like, it is the one to unite the Smash Brothers community. It is not trying to be newbie friendly. It's not trying to hold your hand and be accessible to a non-fighting game audience.
But of course, it's also not trying to alienate people. It's still going to be Smash Brothers after all. Like, you can still have fun playing it even if you don't know what you're doing.
It certainly seems like they have had a certain acknowledgement of the fact that we're making a Smash Brothers game. Let's just lean into that.
Yeah.
And
I mean, without even mentioning the roster, though, one thing I read that was interesting, too, is that they're going to be supporting a wide array of input methods, including supporting the GameCube controller somehow.
Somehow, either an update or some piece of hardware.
Probably some sort of dongle you can buy that clicks into the Switch somewhere that you plug in GameCube controllers into.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Or releasing a new version that's a wireless GameCube controller but has better connectivity and doesn't require the actual device that the WaveBird did for the GameCube to read and whatnot. But yeah, some form of GameCube controller support, which a lot of players in the Smash community love that GameCube controller.
Yeah.
That is their favorite input method. Rock on. You do you and you'll be able to do you.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that the thing that everyone really cares about though is like the characters. I mean,
which one? Take your pick.
Yeah, so if you want to have Solid Snake fight Cloud Strife, you can do that. You want to have Bayonetta in there as well, you can do that.
If you
want to have Mega Man in there, cool. You want to have Meta Knight, cool. You want to have Mr. Game & Watch?
Ryu,
yes, of course you can do that. Dr. Mario, of course you can. Wii Fit Trainer, Zero Suit Samus, Captain Falcon, the Ice Climbers, Sonic, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog, mm-hmm. He's there. Mewtwo, he's there. You know, the villager from Animal Crossing, he's there. And not to say that, you know, not to be outdone, there's still three brand new players or characters that have been revealed as well.
Entering the arena.
I don't know if they're the only three, but there are three that have been revealed at E3.
True. I wonder if we'll get more and we'll maybe just theorize who else you could possibly fit into this super stuffed game. But Inkling from the Splatoon series, which we knew based on the past Nintendo Direct that had the tease of the Inklings with the giant fiery Smash Brothers logo. Cool. Princess Daisy, who is being introduced as what's called an Echo character. So it's different enough to not be a palette swap, but not unique enough to be its kind of standalone character. And it's based on the Princess Peach character, but it's got a few different moves and attributes and things like that, but it's still very similar.
Yeah. Now, the final one is not an Echo character. I don't think it could be an Echo character because it's so different from all the other characters. And the reveal was pretty dark for a Nintendo reveal.
Yet still awesome.
Yeah, the reveal showed, well, it didn't directly show any gore or violence or anything, but
implicated.
It was heavily implicated that Mario got just impaled, as did Link, I believe it was. Mega Man and Mario got impaled by the sharp tail of this dinosaur dragon monster thing. Well, I'd say you've put two and two together, but you've also probably read the internet at this point. And yes, Ridley from Metroid.
Yes, is going to be a fighter in this game.
Yeah, and he looks ridiculous.
So I cannot wait to see people post videos of Ridley fighting Jigglypuff in a Smash Brothers game.
And Jigglypuff crushing Ridley. For the lulz, I believe, as the kids would say.
Yes, a tag team match. Kirby and Jigglypuff taking on Ridley, and I just want to see them roasted like marshmallows.
Well, I guess Ridley and Bowser. You would have to have like
the two. You can't do a three-way, but... Or you could do a three-way dance.
Yeah.
Or tag team, two-on-two, whatever. Just, I want to see Ridley just roast all the ridiculously small, tiny speedster characters.
Yeah.
Pichu, even. Diddy Kong, sure. So, Ridley is in there, and looks like it's going to be a very bruising, like, smashing character.
Yeah.
Like a brute.
But, as we mentioned, you know, Solid Snake will be there.
Yes.
And, you know, in recent times, there's been some weird controversy with the character of Solid Snake, with David Hayter's voice being kind of oddly replaced with Kiefer Sutherland for some reason, and it just, he's not Solid Snake. I mean, we can think whatever we want, but Solid Snake is David Hayter. David Hayter is the definitive Solid Snake. There's no one's gonna question that, I think. And I think Nintendo recognized that, and as a result, when we see Solid Snake in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, he will be voiced, indeed, by David Hayter.
Now, there's an asterisk to that, because we don't know if that's going to be new lines that David Hayter has recorded, or they're simply reusing old lines from Snake's previous appearance in the Smash Brothers game.
I mean, that's a good question or a good point as well, but...
I don't think it matters.
It doesn't matter. It's still David Hayter. That's the real voice. It won't be weird and off-putting.
Because it's still the same character style of Solid Snake that was previously used in Smash Brothers Melee.
Exactly.
It's... Or so, was it Brawl? Brawl or Melee? I think it's Brawl. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's Brawl because it was the Wii version of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Regardless, yes, it's the, you know, first game version of Solid Snake that we see from the first Metal Gear Solid game, voiced by David Hayter. Shadow Moses is a stage that you'll be able to play in the game as well. And it seems like they're really just trying to make this legitimately the ultimate version of a Smash Brothers game. A whole bunch of previous stages are coming back, but a lot of things have been tweaked. And like I said, 25 minutes of that Nintendo Direct were taken up with Smash Brothers Ultimate. It wasn't just all the character reveals, but they did reveal every single character, and it's all of the old ones, plus these three new ones, as we said. But going into some of the mechanical tweaks of what they've done to some characters, even pointing out some changes they made to the character design for the Mii characters, the Mii brawler, sword fighter, and gunner type characters, changed some of the proportions in their extremities.
Yeah.
Showing some facial features or facial animations that, say, Donkey Kong and some other characters will have. And they're really putting a lot of work and effort into this to make the definitive Smash Brothers game. And yeah, you'll be able to get it in December on December 7th. So Nintendo's release calendar for the fall is Super Mario Party in October, and then Pokemon Let's Go, Pikachu and Eevee in November, November 16th, and then Smash Brothers on December 7th. So they don't have a robust first party slate, but three solid titles.
Yeah, but you did mention Super Mario, this other title?
Super Mario Party?
Yes, we should probably mention too, that was another thing that was revealed.
That was the surprise.
Yeah, that was actually maybe the one I was most excited about, because I always like a new Mario Party game, and I mean, maybe it's just because I'm an old person, but you know, my favorite Mario Party was Mario Party 3, and I kind of always wished to see them harken back to that style of Mario Party game without getting too weird and wacky with some of the input methods and like tweaking the game too much overall.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just like the straight up board game style, but this one actually looks like it could possibly be a good return to form.
It looks like it's simplifying it.
Yeah, and also bringing some weird new mechanics if you have multiple switches. There's multiple Switch games that you can play. If you have like two-on-two kind of battles now, you can legitimately do it without having to do a split screen.
That's true, with your Switches. And also some mini games that we saw in the trailer that was shown during the Nintendo Direct that can span multiple Switch screens.
Yeah, like, I mean, of course, like I mentioned, like the two-on-two games, but also when you lay them together, there's other things like an above, like there was one, I think it was like a tank game or something, where you can just sort of, like you calibrate the systems together and then it just sort of knows where they are, and then you drive tanks kind of across the screens and each one is like a base kind of thing. Looks really cool. I don't know how great it's going to work in practice, but in theory, it looks really interesting.
It's a really neat technical feat you can do with the Switch that we didn't know about at all.
Yeah.
That you could just have Switch screens talk to each other. And if Mario Party can do this, is this open to other developers?
Yeah, and it's sort of like, they're kind of bringing back the excitement of the LAN party without all of like the hassle, basically.
True. And the majority of what was shown in Super Mario Party is having four people together playing the game.
Yeah.
With multiple Switches, or just one Switch unit on a TV.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, that was the main selling point of the Mario Party games on the N64 and onto the GameCube, is you can have four players simultaneous. And then chaos, and someone ultimately screws you and steals all your stars.
Yeah.
Maybe that person's your sister, and it happens every goddamn time. Whatever. Those moments are able to come back again in Super Mario Party.
I really hope so. It's been a while since I've had like a good, you know, Mario Party night with a bunch of friends.
And also too, the franchise has kind of been dormant for a while.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few kind of, I mean, let's face it, less than stellar titles for the Wii.
Wii U.
So
they had that oddball game called Fortune Street, which they co-developed with Square Enix, where it had like some like white and black mages and Moogles in there, but it was kind of the idea of Mario Party, but it went more board gamey and less mini gamey. It didn't work and wasn't well received. But this one, Super Mario Party, October 5th is when you'll be able to get it. And yeah, look for it in October. October is a crazy month. We'll get into October in just a moment, but another thing that Nintendo surprised people with during their Direct is the fact that the most popular game on planet Earth right now is available on their platform.
Yeah, so obviously the game being Fortnite, they revealed that it's available on the Switch. They revealed that it was available on the Switch the second that they announced that it was available, so people, of course, were like, what? It's available on the Switch? To the point where 2 million people downloaded it in the first day for the Switch. 2 million.
Good God.
Yes, one day on the Switch, 2 million people. That's bananas. That's outrageous.
So that, and the interesting thing is Fortnite on the Switch has cross-platform multiplayer.
Yeah.
Or mostly cross-platform multiplayer.
With the exception of PlayStation, yes.
And that's kind of the rude awakening a lot of people came to, that there are issues with trying to play on the PlayStation 4 through the PlayStation 4 against Switch, and the two platforms just aren't talking to each other, and reporters tried to get comment on the situation from Sony, and they ultimately released a very corporate-speaky, PR-filled, say-nothing transmission that, or communique that amounted to not really saying why they won't let their platform be part of this Fortnite cross-platform multiplayer. The big takeaway is they don't give a shit about cross-platform.
Yeah, they don't want to support it, even though Microsoft and Nintendo have already kind of said, yeah, let's do it. It's the way the world's going.
And we've seen this before from Sony. They don't care.
Yeah.
They are not interested in it. But interesting little thing that people quickly found out with Fortnite on the Switch is that it has built-in voice chat.
Yeah, so you don't need any separate app like for most Nintendo games that have online functionality where you need to download the stupid Nintendo app. And at that point, it's like, well, for me anyways, if I'm playing games with my friends, they're probably local friends. I can just give them a call and just we'll do like a speakerphone thing or something like, but this is built into the app. You don't need the built into the game. You don't need a special separate app. You don't need anything like that.
And previously when Nintendo released Splatoon 2 with the online voice chat, how they worked voice chat into Splatoon 2 was the necessity of some external device that was shaped like an Inkling squid thing where you'd have to plug in headphones and then plug in like your Switch, and it was really cumbersome and stupid, but this is literally just right there and it works. And is this going to be how voice chat on Switch works from now? I mean, if Fortnite, I can't see any other developer accepting the having to use the voice chat app route for their games on Switch. Precedent's been set.
Exactly.
And this may have been a demand from Epic Games that they have built-in voice chat, and they have the ability to get what they want because they have the hottest game on the planet, which I think they just said recently that they have over 125 million players.
That's insane.
In a year.
Insane. And this is an online game that you play with a bunch of people. 125 million. I don't want to know what their server system would look like. What their infrastructure management must be like. It must be the most stressful job on the planet.
The electricity bills for all their server hubs.
Crazy.
Could you imagine trying to map that out?
No. Absolutely not.
Imagine the nightmares you would have if you were that person.
Yeah, like, oh God, Fortnite, no, ah, oh, it was all just a dream. Oh no, my phone is going off. No!
Just one cable in this sprawling empire of servers and networks is unplugged and the whole thing goes to shit.
Though in reality, it's probably all like virtual servers and stuff, but still like, which virtual server? Oh God, why is this one going down?
Why is it cascading? It's not supposed to do that.
But
it's coming from inside the servers.
But you may have heard us mention October a bunch.
October, yes. And I did just make comment in there about Super Mario Party coming out in October because October is a stuffed month.
Not like hundreds of games are coming out or anything, but the weightiness of the games that are coming out in October is really noteworthy.
The caliber and just the frequency of those high caliber games coming out in October seems rather unprecedented. Normally, once we get into the holiday game release season, as companies try to kind of space their titles out from their competition, so there can be maybe like 2 weeks between big titles. So the interested parties who would buy one wartime shooting game will have like a paycheck come in between, so they'll have enough money to go buy the other wartime shooting game. Things like that nature. But this year, no one's following along with that because this is the new reality and the old rules do not apply.
Yes.
But here we are. So we've kind of aggregated some of the big releases for October. And we'll give them to you now just to give you an idea. And it starts off on October 2nd, where if you're into racing games, you'll be able to play Forza Horizon 4 on your PC or Xbox One. Or, and also if you're into it as well, Mega Man 11. Now, Mega Man 11, not necessarily like a big AAA release in the same vein as Forza Horizon, but still a lot of people are going to be interested in that. So that's Mega Man 11 coming to play Xbox One, PC, PlayStation 4, and Switch. Okay, cool. 3 days later, October 5th, Assassin's Creed Odyssey comes out, as does Super Mario Party. Cool. A week later, Call of Duty Black Ops 4 comes out, and then 4 days after that, you have Starlink, the Ubisoft title that they showed off both last year and this year. That's the game that's kind of like No Man's Sky meets Skylanders. It's the one where you can have the toy ships attached to your controller and alter them and maybe add more weapons, take away weapons, boosters, whatever, and it affects your ship in the game, which actually at the Ubisoft conference, they showed off that Starlink for the Switch will also include the R-Wing from Star Fox.
Which is always a good way of pandering to the audience.
They did. And they actually had Shigeru Miyamoto in attendance and presented him with like the actual first replica model of the R-Wing from Starlink and brought him backstage to go speak with the dev team.
Which I'm sure he was pretty happy about, and the dev team must have been really happy about.
I'm sure they were. Oh my god, we get to meet Miyamoto!
It's like, the holy crap, literally a legend in the industry. Awesome.
So Starlink Battle for Atlas from Ubisoft comes out on October 16th for the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Switch. And that same day, Lego DC Supervillains, where you can create and just wreak havoc as a villain in the DC universe, comes out for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, Switch, and PC. Cool. So then, 3 days after that, October 19th, you have your choice of a wartime shooter or, like, a high-caliber fighting game. Because Battlefield 5 and Soul Calibur 6 come out that day, October 19th, for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PC. Cool. 4 days after that, Just Dance 2019 comes out. Maybe you need a bit of a breather. Maybe you need to get up and move, and Just Dance 2019 will be your calisthenics for that month.
Yeah, so that's, of course, for the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, Switch, PC, and Wii.
Yes. And Xbox 360 Kinect.
Yes. Nothing else. And then finally, the one that I think is most people are probably going to be excited about, October 26th, Red Dead Redemption 2.
On the Xbox One and PlayStation 4. So, that's a ridiculous month.
Yeah, crazy month. Lots and lots of high caliber, weighty releases right there.
And I've said it before on this program, in past weeks and past months, when talking about the upcoming release schedule or game release calendar for the fall, that nothing was really staking a flag in the month of November, and nothing really has, other than Pokemon Let's Go and also Fallout 76. But that's only two titles, like two big titles in 1 month.
So maybe Fallout 76 is going to have a banner month?
I don't know. I don't understand the rationale for it. I don't know why. There isn't as much in November, and October seems so disproportionately packed with these big game releases. And even Smash Brothers, December 7th. Did I miss something? I don't know. Like, I understand Nintendo pacing out their big releases month by month by month. Cool, but everyone else? Did I miss something? I feel like I missed something. I probably missed something.
Maybe they missed something. Maybe it was just sort of like a big miscommunication where they all got all the wrong information, or did all their intelligence didn't pan out, and they just sort of...
Everyone was bluffing everyone else?
Yeah, it was like the worst poker game of all time, and then, oh crap.
And everyone just folded at the same time?
No, everyone showed their hand and no one won. The dealer won, everyone busted. It was like, crap. All right, well, here we are. I see we all have nuclear weapons.
All right, then.
Yes.
So that's a very big month, and that was a lot to take in from E3. And there was much more, but we are not going to do a supersized episode because, we just don't want to talk for that long.
Yeah.
And we're pretty sure you don't want to hear us talk for that long. So we'll break it up into two episodes. Next week will be some of the other stories we missed from E3 or didn't have time to get to this week. Traditionally, our E3 shows are part one being the big three, Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft. And I think we've done a pretty good job of covering that this week, and everything else will be on part two, which comes out next Friday. But before we can get to next Friday, we have to wrap up this show, and we have one last piece of business to get to on this program. It is our Blast from the Past, the segment of the show where we take a few moments to fete, to celebrate, to discuss, and perhaps encourage you to check out and try some pieces of media from yesteryear that are celebrating noteworthy anniversaries. We have two items, a movie and a musical album that you could have bought on CD or torrented off LimeWire, BearShare, you know, any early day peer-to-peer system. One is 10 years old, one is 25 years old. Where would you like to start on this week's program?
You mean one's 15 years old?
Sorry, one's 15 years old.
Yes.
Man.
I'm like, wait, what? Oh, no. Yeah, so we could probably start with the 15-year-old one and then work our way backwards in time even further.
All right. 15 years ago takes us to June 17th of 2003. That was the day when record stores everywhere got the latest release from Type O Negative, their sixth album, Life is Killing Me. And if you've heard us on this program before, you know we are fans of Type O Negative and their kind of doomy metal gloom style of music.
Yeah, while also having a pretty good sense of humor about it. Like, they're so over the top that they know that they're so over the top. And the way that you know this is by watching live performances of the band, which sadly is no longer, hasn't been for a number of years at this point, because sadly, several years ago, the lead singer, bassist, songwriter,
giant of a man,
crazy, deep-voiced person, Peter Steele, who ultimately was the heart and soul of Type O Negative, passed away at the age of 48.
Yeah, there's no way you could replicate that voice, that sound.
No, and, well, frankly, that sound and the influence, because he was the main songwriter and lyricist and frontman and everything. Like, the band would not be
Type and bass O player.
Yeah, and bass player. Fantastic bass player as well. I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
Stand-up bass player as well.
Well, played a stand-up bass as an around-the-neck bass in their Black Number One video, but yeah, this album, it's a pretty, I mean, I hate to say it's a pretty standard Type O Negative album, but it's a pretty standard Type O Negative album. I mean, if you either like or hate the band, and if you're not a fan, fine, but I always implore people to give them a shot. I mean, this is my favorite Type O Negative album, but it has some pretty okay songs on it, like, you know, the title track, Life is Killing Me, you know, and 13, and I Don't Want to Be Me. Great song.
True. I was just listening to it again recently, and yes, Type O Negative music in the albums are typically gloomy metal. There's a bit of sludge to the sound of them musically. But that being said, there's also oftentimes in the songs just a driving beat.
And also really, really like profound melody as well.
Yes. Like, so it's not just totally bleak and gloomy the whole time. They do actually lighten it as well, which you wouldn't think would happen with something as, you know, dark and brooding as a Type O Negative album. But yeah, they have to add some light to it. Otherwise, you're just going to depress your fan base.
Yeah.
Into oblivion.
Exactly.
So Type O Negative, worth listening to at least once.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got songs that are very catchy and a beat that's just really toe-tapping a lot of times. So worth your while to check out.
And his otherworldly deep voice.
Oh, like, God.
You never hear that in rock. I mean, usually rock singers kind of compete to hit the high notes, like to try to reach the, you know, the heights that a Robert Plant or a Chris Cornell or those of that kind of
Freddie Mercury,
like
Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah. Like they're all just kind of like the classic, like the kind of screamer, just get up there. But no, Peter Steele took it in the opposite direction. Just get as low as possible.
And it worked. It totally worked. So it's worth checking out. Type O Negative, Life is Killing Me, 15 years old as of June 17th. Now, it might seem like we kind of rushed through that one to get to our other one, our other Blast from the Past item, and you're right, we did.
We did, because we have to. Because this one, I think we're going to talk about a little bit more.
This is, it's a movie from June 18th of 1993. It is one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's best movies ever.
It's so bizarre, and it was so critically panned, because I genuinely think critics didn't understand what they were watching.
The movie we're talking about with that kind of introduction is Last Action Hero. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't, because it came out the week after Jurassic Park. Whomever was at the movie studio really, really buggered that one up.
They couldn't have known, though. I mean, no, like...
I guess.
Who would have known, oh, this some Steven Spielberg movie about dinosaurs, it's not guaranteed to be a smash hit. True. It ended up being one of the most iconic movies of all time, of course, which we talked about last week.
And in that hysteria, this movie was totally glossed over. It didn't get attention. It did not terribly well at the box office. And as you said, the critical reception was very poor for this Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. It is an action movie, as the title implies. It is Last Action Hero. It is Arnold Schwarzenegger playing a movie star who is known for his over-the-top, explosion-based action movies.
Yeah, but it's weirder than that, because while his... So it's a meta thing where it's basically a Willy Wonka-type thing where this kid has this golden ticket that kind of lets him in to see the movies for free. But he realizes that the golden ticket actually lets him go into the world of the movie, and the movie he was watching was, I think, like the fourth movie in the Slater universe, which is, you know, in the context of, you know, this movie's universe is like the big action franchise that has Arnold Schwarzenegger in it. And if I'm not mistaken, it was actually billed as inside the movie as being Slater starring Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie.
Possibly. Like, it may have been that meta.
Like, it's been a while since I've watched it, because I know that there were weird references. So the kid gets into this movie, and it's basically, he's in a cartoon world, basically, like, violence is so over the top, and it's like, it doesn't actually kill anyone. You know, Slater gets shot, and he's like, ah, it's fine. Then, like, it's all just like a big, like, macho, you know, pissing contest at the police station and all this stuff. And when I did remember when they got into, you know, the real world and they're walking around, it was like an alternate universe version of what our world is, because I guess they showed like Stallone was supposed to be the Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like Sylvester Stallone is the Terminator. And then, you know, I want to say that it was like Schwarzenegger's character as Slater was like, I really respect his work kind of thing, which is a great nod to their long rivalry at the time. But yeah, the whole thing was like him as a character and the kid, they both spilled out into the real world, as did the bad guy from the movie. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger, the actor, ended up becoming like hostage of the bad guy from Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie, and then Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie character had to like do all these crazy things to try to save him. And it was really meta.
It in some ways deconstructed the action movie genre too.
It really did. Which is what, I mean, I didn't watch it until I was an adult and could come to these thoughts and conclusions myself. So I was like, wow, this movie's crazy. And then I looked into the reviews. I'm like, wow, these reviewers didn't understand it at all. They're just like, wow, what a ham-fisted acting that Arnold Schwarzenegger did in this movie. And it's like, no, that's the whole point. He's literally playing a parody of all of his most over-the-top action roles as this Slater character. And he was pretty much like winking at the camera literally the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's brought into the real world, he kind of realizes, oh crap, this over-the-top violence is actually like just that. Like it's... These real-world physics and limitations are sure, you know, kind of hard to deal with. Like, I think that his character was even surprised that he couldn't pick up a car at one point. And then everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about? Of course he can't pick up a car. What are you talking about? It's like thousands of pounds.
So his character has to come to terms with the fact that he's maybe not quite as the macho hero as he was in all his movies. But at the same time, he's trying to argue with the kid that he... You know, it's not a movie, it's real life, because to him as the character, Jack Slater, it is his life. It's all he knows. Because, again, the kid crosses into the movie world, and then you see at points, well, that movie world is more than just the storyline that was appearing on screen. They go back to Jack Slater's house at one point, and it still was very much an action movie because he just casually shoots into his closet and kills a ninja.
Yeah.
Who was there to assassinate him, and the kid is just, wow, like, how'd you know? And Jack Slater says, like, well, there's always one in there. And then you see his house, it's totally empty, which, like, in some ways is sad that there would be this guy, who, this big action hero, and he returns home to nothing.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it goes over the top because the villain, as you said, comes out of the movie universe and starts, but still does villainy things in the real universe and is actually very much a villain and a bad guy. But yet, I'm thinking to the scene of the, like, mob funeral.
Yeah.
Where he tries to, like, basically blow up a whole funeral, and then Arnold Schwarzenegger's Jack Slater character has to stop it and save everyone with one of the, like, if you were expecting, like, an action comedy back in 93, it would be terrible and ham-fisted. And that,
oh, yeah.
And that may be how it was marketed at the time, too, which may have been a failing on the part of the, you know, advertising team back in the day. But if you're watching it, understanding that it's meta and it's an action movie star who's come out of his movie into the real, quote-unquote, real world, as normal people would have seen it in, like, L.A. in 1993, the mob funeral massacre, quote-unquote, scene, how Arnold Schwarzenegger's character saves the day, is completely schlocky, but it's hilarious and great. And I'll always remember, too, every time Arnold Schwarzenegger's character gets called into, like, his boss's office, like his, you know, sergeant's office in the police district in the movie, like the actual movie the kid's watching, every, like, angry, like, sergeant in every action movie ever.
Yeah. All of the police, the angry cop tropes are on full display.
Yes. Over the top. And to the point where, like, literally steam is coming out the sergeant's ears at points.
Actually, yes.
And there's even, like, a cartoon partner that that Jack Slater had at one point.
Yes, making it even weirder.
Which I think he was voiced by, like, Danny DeVito. Why do I want to say he was voiced by Danny DeVito?
That's,
I have a recollection. It may have been a Danny DeVito sound-alike at the time, or that's just what my brain has filled in because it wants it to be Danny DeVito.
Well, according to Wikipedia, it was Danny DeVito, who was uncredited, who is the voice of Whiskers, a cartoon cat police detective, which was, of course, after him and Schwarzenegger were both in Twins together.
Yes. Okay, perfect. So, the old memory banks still running smoothly. Excellent. That's all I could hope for. But if you haven't seen it, and you're a fan of Schwarzenegger movies, you owe it to yourself to check out Last Action Hero. Like, in every way, shape, and form. It is worth your time. It is worth watching. And before Deadpool broke the fourth wall and everyone loved that aspect of Deadpool, Last Action Hero did it.
Yep.
Like, they showed a movie in a movie, and then the movie came out of that movie into the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it was very almost like Mel Brooks.
At the end of Blazing Saddles?
At the end of a lot of his movies. Blazing Saddles, I want to say maybe also vaguely Spaceballs, High Anxiety at times. Yeah. Mostly Blazing Saddles, though.
Yes, certainly. When they're going all across the sound stages.
Yeah.
Totally worth it. I mean, this isn't Blazing Saddles. It's not up on that par, but it's a really interesting movie, and deserves a bit more respect, I think we'd conclude, than what it gets and what history has given it.
Yeah.
I don't know why it doesn't get the love. It should.
Yeah,
it understand should. Its meta, understand it's breaking the fourth wall, understand it's kinda taking the piss out of some of the standard action movie tropes.
Exactly.
And it had the director from Die Hard, John McTiernan. And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
I mean, that's all that I think can literally be said about the movie.
So if you haven't seen it, it is much to your detriment. You owe it to your person or persons. Maybe there's other people who would share it in the joy of it with you. Watch Last Action Hero, which celebrates its 25th anniversary on June 18th. And if you're into doom metal and the deep vocal stylings of Peter Steele, Life is Killing Me, their sixth album by Typo Negative, celebrates its 15th anniversary on June 17th. 15th, not 10th, as I mistakenly said earlier.
Yes.
Thank you for correcting me, because math is hard.
It sure is sometimes.
Whew, numbers. Am I right?
It's true.
But that about wraps us up for this week's edition of The Arcade. We thank you so much for joining us of part one of our E3 wrap-up, part two, the other stories, other smaller stories, other general E3 stories coming up on next week's program, and we hope you will join us for that. So until then, we encourage you to let us know your thoughts on E3. Were you underwhelmed? Were you still baffled by Death Stranding? Were you grossed out by the level of violence in the Last of Us Part 2 trailer? Were you in awe of all the carpet bombing that Microsoft did at their conference with all the 50-plus game announcements? Let us know your thoughts. You can email us info@thearcadeshow.com or hit us up on Twitter, slide into our DMs, but not like that. We are at The Arcade Show and on Facebook, facebook.com/TheArcadeShow. And hell, while you're at it doing all these things, you can like our show, leave us a review, leave us a rating, and subscribe to us on both iTunes and the Google Play Podcast Store. Direct links to both of those pages on our homepage, thearcadeshow.com. So until next week, good night, everybody.
Good night.